Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Thanks for joining us today for episode 436. Today is Wednesday, June 24, 2026, and we are looking back at the most interesting stuff that hit the front page yesterday, June 23rd.
We have a really packed and diverse lineup today. We're going to be talking about a fiery piece from Cory Doctorow on why age verification on the internet is actually just mass surveillance. Then we will get into the weeds of data engineering with a new file format called F3 that wants to replace Parquet.
We also had a massive day for AI document parsing with two huge releases. Baidu dropped a fascinating open source project called Unlimited OCR, and Mistral announced Mistral OCR 4. And finally, we will discuss a very serious and heavy geopolitical story regarding a UN inquiry into the war in Gaza and how the Hacker News community is analyzing the geopolitical fallout.
Let us start with our top story of the day. Cory Doctorow published a piece on his Pluralistic blog titled, "What We Call Age Verification is Actually Mass Surveillance." It got almost 800 points. Cory is known for his sharp critiques of big tech and government overreach, and he really did not hold back here.
No, he did not. His core argument is that the current political push to protect kids online by mandating age verification is a Trojan horse. He points out that this is creating a weird, unholy alliance between anti-big tech campaigners and culture warriors. They all agree kids need a minimum age for the internet, but Cory argues there is simply no way to verify age without implementing pervasive, fine-grained tracking of everything everyone does online.
Exactly. He says this is actually the surveillance advertising industry's fondest dream. If you have to prove your identity and age to access websites, it becomes literally illegal to avoid tracking. He even suggests that tech bosses are secretly thrilled about these mandates because it normalizes the exact kind of data harvesting they profit from.
The Hacker News comments on this were incredibly detailed, as you would expect when privacy and cryptography intersect. A user named John Strinley pushed back a bit, saying age verification does not have to be a nightmare dystopia if we just accept a 90% success rate instead of aiming for 100%.
Right, and that kicked off a huge debate about how you would actually build a privacy-preserving age check. A commenter named ARG203118 brought up the European Union's eID wallets. The idea is that your government issues a cryptographic credential to a secure enclave on your phone. When a website asks if you are over 18, your phone generates a zero-knowledge proof. The website only sees a mathematically verified yes or no, backed by the government, but they do not get your name, and the government does not see which website you are visiting.
It sounds great in theory, but another user, Orn Mornes, pointed out the fatal flaw. To prevent people from just copying that over 18 credential and sharing it with all their underage friends, the system has to send a stable device public key. And the moment you are sending a stable public key to every website you visit, congratulations, you have just reinvented device fingerprinting. We have spent years trying to stop stable tracking IDs, and this would mandate them by law.
It is a classic cybersecurity trade-off. If you want to stop teenagers from sharing IDs, you have to tie the identity to an account or a specific piece of hardware. And once you do that, anonymous browsing is basically dead. It's a really tough problem, and Cory's point is that the cure might be much worse than the disease.
Speaking of tough technical problems, let us move to our second story. A group of researchers published a paper and an open source repo for F3, which stands for Future Proof File Format. This got over 600 points. They are aiming to fix the shortcomings of Parquet.
For our listeners who might not live in the data engineering trenches, Parquet has been the absolute king of columnar storage for over a decade. If you're doing data analytics, you are probably using Parquet. But this new F3 format argues that Parquet was built for a different era of hardware. F3's big innovation is that it embeds WebAssembly, or WASM, decoders directly inside the data file itself.
That is the part that really caught my eye. Usually, if you have a file format, you need to have the right software library installed on your machine to read it. F3 says, let's just put the decoding software inside the file. It only adds a few kilobytes, and it means 10 years from now, even if the native libraries are gone or updated, you can still read the data because the file brings its own instructions.
It's a super clever concept for future-proofing, but the Hacker News crowd is notoriously hard to impress when it comes to replacing foundational tech. A user named Val Fietzman had a highly upvoted critique. They pointed out that Parquet wins simply because of compatibility. It's everywhere. Even Parquet struggles to update itself because the 2013 version is so widely supported.
Yeah, and they also questioned the WASM approach. A user named Jason JR raised a massive security red flag. They asked, wait, so attackers don't even have to craft specially corrupted files anymore? They can just include the malicious code directly in the data file itself? Executing code embedded in a data file downloaded from the internet is definitely going to make security teams sweat.
That is a very fair point. But another commenter, Ad Duffy, who actually works on a competing modern format called Vortex, chimed in to defend the need for these new formats. They pointed out that modern machine learning workloads require a mix of massive batch scans and fast random access. Parquet was not built for that. Companies are hitting a wall with Parquet's performance in AI pipelines, which is why we are seeing formats like F3, Lance, and Vortex popping up.
That is a perfect transition to our next two stories, Sarah, because yesterday was essentially OCR day on Hacker News. We had two massive posts about optical character recognition and document parsing. The first was from Baidu, called Unlimited OCR, which promises one-shot long-horizon parsing.
This one is super technical, but really important. If you have ever tried to feed a 100-page PDF into a large language model, you know it usually crashes or hallucinates. That is because of something called the KV cache. The model tries to hold every single word it has read in its short-term memory, and that memory usage grows linearly until the GPU runs out of VRAM.
Exactly. So right now, developers use janky workarounds. They chop the PDF into single pages, process them one by one, and try to stitch the text back together. Baidu's Unlimited OCR solves this with an architectural hack called Reference Sliding Window Attention.
A user named Robots Want Data gave a brilliant explanation of this in the comments. Basically, the AI splits its focus. It keeps a global reference of the original document image so it never loses the big picture context. But for its own generated text, it only remembers a tight moving window, like the last 128 words, and safely forgets the rest. It stops the memory from exploding while keeping the context intact.
What I loved about that thread was how people started applying this concept to other areas. A commenter named Pook mentioned they have been trying to solve this exact problem for long-running AI voice conversations. How do you get the AI to remember the user's name and background forever, but safely forget what they had for breakfast 3 weeks ago? This sliding window approach might be the key to persistent AI companions that do not run out of memory.
And right next to that story on the front page was Mistral announcing Mistral OCR 4. It is clear that the industry is moving way beyond just extracting text. Mistral OCR 4 does what they call document intelligence. It gives you the text, but it also gives you bounding boxes, block classification like titles, tables, and signatures, and inline confidence scores.
The bounding boxes are huge. It means the AI doesn't just tell you what the document says, it tells you exactly where on the page it says it. That is critical for things like automated redaction or for human-in-the-loop systems where a person needs to verify an invoice and the software highlights the exact pixels where it found the total amount.
And Mistral made it small enough to run in a single container for self-hosted deployments. For enterprises dealing with sensitive legal or financial documents, they cannot send that data out to an API. They need to run it locally. Between Baidu's memory breakthroughs and Mistral's structured outputs, the era of humans manually doing data entry from PDFs might actually be coming to a close.
It really feels like we are crossing a threshold there. For our final story today, we are shifting to a very serious piece of global news that sparked a heavy discussion on the site. Reuters reported on a UN inquiry stating that Israel targeted children in Gaza, resulting in genocide. The report stated that between October 2023 and October 2025, over 20,000 children were killed, which accounts for about 30% of the overall death toll.
It is a devastating report, and it generated a very intense and complex discussion on Hacker News. We always find it interesting to see how the HN community processes geopolitical events, because they tend to analyze them through the lenses of statistics, history, and game theory.
Right. For example, a user named Hashstring argued that the sheer numbers invalidate any claims of minimizing harm. They pointed out that killing a child a day for years is either a sign of complete military incompetence or it is being done on purpose, and they called for heavy international sanctions.
But then you had users analyzing the demographics. A commenter named Borilaj pointed out that the under 18 population in the Gaza Strip is roughly 47%. They argued that if deaths fell completely randomly across the population, children would make up 47% of the casualties, not 30%. They used that to question the UN's framing of intentional targeting, while also pointing out the UN's historical focus on Israel compared to other conflicts.
And then the conversation zoomed out to the macro geopolitical level. A really insightful comment from Saturn8601 compared Israel's current diplomatic situation to South Africa during the apartheid era. They talked about the concept of strategic ambiguity regarding nuclear weapons.
Yes, that was a fascinating historical parallel. South Africa never explicitly acknowledged they had nuclear weapons, but they made sure the world knew they were a credible threat, which gave them massive leverage during their border wars. The commenter suggested Israel operates on a similar doctrine.
But the commenter also pointed out that South Africa's leverage evaporated overnight when the Cold War ended and the US and UK stopped shielding them from global economic sanctions. The discussion centered around whether we are watching a similar shift in real time. If the US were to remove its diplomatic shield, the economic cost of maintaining the war could outweigh the security benefits, just as it did for South Africa.
It is a grim and complicated topic, but it shows how Hacker News users try to break down emotional and tragic world events into structural components to understand where the levers of power actually sit.
It really does. And that wraps up our coverage for today. From the hidden surveillance of age verification and the future of data files, to the massive leaps in AI document parsing and the heavy realities of global conflict, it was a day that really showed the full spectrum of what people care about on Hacker News.
Thank you so much for listening to HN Pod. We will be back tomorrow to break down the next wave of top stories. Have a great day, everyone.